Welcome back to the third hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Congressman John Shimkus is going to join us momentarily. We're going to be talking about what's going on in Washington. Get our Washington update that's becoming a semi-regular feature with Congressman Shimkus from the 19th Congressional District of Illinois. And then we've got audio open lines for your questions and your comments. Senator McCain, who I think it's fair to say he has his eye on a bid for the presidency in 08, at least he does now, has spoken at Liberty University, Jerry Falwell's institution, and he had some interesting things to say. Some people are calling this a switch for Senator McCain. That'll be during audio open lines. Also, there's a verdict in the famous Dan Brown Da Vinci Code trial that took place in London. The authors of The Holy Blood and the Holy Grail were suing Dan Brown. We'll tell you who won and what it means in audio open lines. Katie Holmes, who is mother to Tom Cruise's soon-to-be-born child, not wife to Tom Cruise. Katie Holmes is adopting the Scientology's practice. Tom Cruise is a Scientologist. Of a silent birth. We'll talk about that during audio open lines as well. And we've got some other things for your reaction, 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. You know, it's often said that nothing can be compared, nothing is greater than the mother's love for a child. Now, in a human sense, I suppose that's true, but there is a love and a relationship far greater, far deeper, and that is our Heavenly Father's love for us sinners in Jesus Christ. He calls us His children. And I'm thinking about a Bible passage. When I think about our Issues Etc. book of the month for April, Mommy Promises, the Bible passage really doesn't have much to do with mommies, but it has to do with our Heavenly Father. John writes in one of his epistles, "Behold what manner of love the Father has given to us that we should be called the children of God, and that is what we are," says the apostle. Well, the mother's love for child is there merely to reflect and model and show for us the greater love of Father, our Heavenly Father, for His children in Jesus Christ. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for April is called Mommy Promises. It's written by Julie Stiegelmeyer. It's $12.99 plus shipping and handling. You can find it at our website, issuesetc.org, right there where the book of the month usually is, issuesetc.org, or you can order the book by calling Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Concordia Publishing House also has two bookstores in the St. Louis area. One is in the city at 3558 South Jefferson, 3558 South Jefferson. You can find the book there as well. And here on the campus of Concordia Seminary, there are signs to the CPH bookstore. When you get there, you'll find the Issues Etc. book of the month for April, Mommy Promises by Julie Stiegelmeyer. Issuesetc.org or the number for Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Now, until we hear from Congressman Shimkus, a little audio open lines for your reaction. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. First thing we're going to hear about is the close to the Dan Brown Da Vinci Code Holy Blood, Holy Grail trial that just wrapped up in London.
Fans of the Da Vinci Code may breathe a collective sigh of relief. The suspense is over. Britain's High Court ruled that the author Dan Brown did not violate copyright laws. His reputation remains intact, and the Hollywood film version remains on track. Michael Bagent and Richard Lee, writers of The Holy Blood and The Holy Grail, had claimed Brown appropriated the architecture of their book. After the ruling, Brown issued a statement saying, "Today's verdict shows this case was utterly without merit, and I am still astonished these two authors chose to file their suit at all." The stakes were high, not just for Brown, but for other writers. If the court had ruled in favor of the plaintiffs, it could have set a legal precedent that many authors feel would have constrained their work and expression.
"Today's judgment ensures that novelists will remain free to draw on ideas and historical research
Brown's novel and the nonfiction book The Holy Blood and the Holy Grail do share a central controversial theory that Jesus and Mary Magdalene conceived a child and sired a surviving bloodline. But other books deal with the same theme. They just haven't made as much money. $90 million and counting, to be precise. The judge did say that Brown borrowed certain elements from the earlier work, but nothing to constitute copyright infringement. Stephanie Tsai, ABC News, London.
Now, as I've said many times, if Holy Blood, Holy Grail is history, then of course you can't copyright history, and this decision is a good one for Dan Brown. You know what's even better for Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code? A movie's coming out here within the space of a month, and he's had... Now, it hadn't been free. I'm sure he's been paying his lawyers through the nose, but he's had... He'll make it back. He's had some of the best international publicity for that movie that anyone could ever, ever ask for. That's just a taste of audio open lines. More of it coming up after the bottom of the hour. Until then, we're talking with Congressman John Shimkus from the 19th Congressional District of Illinois, our Washington update. John, welcome back to Issues Etc.
I'm happy to be with you. I'm on the road, so if I lose you, it's just
one of those things.
Yeah, the reality of politics. I spent most of the day in the Shawnee National Forest hiking some of the wilderness areas. It's a part of my district, and I need to know about it.
Well, Congressman Shimkus, let's start with immigration reform. Would we be talking about immigration reform at the level of the rhetoric there is in the last several weeks were it not an election year in Washington, D.C.?
Well, that's the first time I've been asked that. I think the election year has ramped up the debate, but immigration's been problematic for a couple years now, and I think the border states are really crying out for some federal policy to help them.
What exactly took place last week in the Senate? It looked like there was going to be a reform bill, and then by the time everyone, the dust cleared, there was a compromise bill that had been decided. What did you make of all of that?
It's trying to sort through the fact and fiction of immigration. It's a very difficult process. What a lot of people forget is that the House passed an immigration bill in December of last year, and it's pretty hard-nosed. Basically, our basic premise is enforce the law. We still allow people into this country to work, getting H-1B visa. We allow people to come here to become citizens. The question is the illegal immigration, and is it good or bad for the country? Is it a drain on our resources? Does it help us get some of our products and food cheaper? But does it hold down the wages? And is it a change in our cultural makeup that is speeded up because of the allowing of the illegal immigration?
You and your fellow legislators are on a two-week recess. Have you been hearing much from your constituents as you travel around your district in Illinois about immigration reform?
Very much. Illinois is one of the fifth leading state for illegal immigration, although not in my part of the state. We do have immigrant workers in some of the ag industries, horseradish, some of the nursery industries. But, you know, people, because of the debate in the Senate, they are talking about it, and they ask me, well, what are you guys going to do? And I always turn that around, say, well, what do you think we should do? Because I want to hear from the rank and file. And what was interesting, in essence, last weekend, rank and file, Metro St. Louis, white, probably WASP, are saying enforce the law. Today, I was in the southern part of the state, was on another radio show call-in. Two immigrants called in, one Cuban-American, one Polish-American. They said the same thing, enforce the current law. So that's a pretty, I think that's was really good for me. I actually thanked these two people who called in. I said, thanks, because I can understand people who have been here multiple generations saying enforce the current law. But to hear really recent immigrants really helped me refine the debate for a position that I probably will have to take when we receive a conference report.
Republicans are considered by many to be the party of business and of big business, small business. Is the GOP willing to discipline employers who hire illegal immigrants to deal with the demand side of the immigration problem?
Our House passed bill in December was pretty harsh on those. But it's not all the employers' fault, though, because we don't give them the tools to adequately determine whether the people who apply are real citizens. Here's an example. By law, if they call the Social Security Administration and ask if the Social Security number given by a laborer is valid, all the Social Security Administration can do is say, yes, it's a valid number. They cannot say, because they don't want to, give proprietary information, or they don't want to cast any debate on who it is. They cannot say, yes, it is a Social Security number for a 65-year-old retired female, Caucasian. So if that is a 19-year-old Hispanic male who's using that number, there's no way that that employer knows that. So there's some, we have to clean up our act on the federal side if we're going to be harsh for the employers, if we don't give the employers some help in making an adequate determination.
Keeping our eye on the GOP, Tom DeLay, who was majority leader before he was removed, has said he's not going to run again for office in Texas. How big of an impact is that going to be on the Republican Party?
Well, in the picture of holding his seat, keeping a Republican as a congressman from that area of the state of Texas, his departure helps. As far as the big picture of keeping the majority together, he'll go down in history as one of the better whips, and that's not a bad name. That's an official name of a leadership position. The Democrats have their whip. We have our whip. As a person who can get the body politic, especially Republicans, working together to pass legislation, it'll be a little bit more difficult. We'll be able to do it, but, of course, Tom DeLay was very good at it.
So it was not expected that he was going to be able to re-win his own seat, and that seat probably would have meant a loss of one seat for the Republicans?
We think so, yeah. He was running against a former member of Congress who got his district had changed, who had raised a significant amount of money, and it would not have been a sure thing that Tom DeLay would have got reelected.
DeLay was also able to raise an awful lot of money for the party nationally. Does his departure from kind of national prominence in that sense, will that hurt the fundraising for the GOP?
I don't think so. I think Tom DeLay was a guy who's a fervent conservative believer and one of these guys, and we see him in every walks of life, in every business, who will walk up to the edge of the cliff believing, based upon attorney advice, that he is on the right side of the cliff while the cliff gives way underneath him. And although he has a lot of supporters, he had a lot of people in the party nervous or frustrated. And so now it's just, in essence, a new opportunity for us to get a clean start. A lot of people breathing a sigh of relief as Tom has decided to step down.
Has that whole scandal darkened the prospects for the Republican Party in holding a majority in the House, maybe even the Senate, coming into these midterm elections?
Well, it's not a... I think our biggest challenge right now are the presidential poll numbers is really the thing that in very competitive races that are decided by percentage points here or there, the president polling poorly will reflect in some of those swing districts. And I think that's more of a... Most people don't know who Tom DeLay is. They... In essence, they question the honesty of every politician, especially in Washington, what members have to do is do their job and be out and about their district. And then when you look at districts, district by district and member by member, I think our numbers are poor when it's Republican versus Democrat generic. But when it is, will you reelect your congressman who happens to be a Republican or your congressman who happens to be a Democrat, usually the folks, because of the work done by members, you know, they will do that.
What about the issue of congressional spending? The big concern seems to be going into 08, a ballooning deficit, and congressional spending has a lot to do with that. Talk to that issue, if you would, Congressman Shimkus.
Yeah, and when people talk about budgets, they have to keep our budgetary process in perspective. And real dollars on discretionary, the budget that we can actually deal with, except for Homeland Security and defense, real spending went down last year. Now, what people, when they want to talk about the deficit, they have to include Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Those are promises to pay the future generations that are on automatic pilot that we can't control. And so any really debate about deficits and debts that don't include reforming of the entitlement programs are folks who don't understand our big problem. That's our promises to pay.
On the international front, the war in Iraq is obviously the biggest story, and it will continue to be so, the biggest story. Congressman Shimkus, some are now saying, look, Iraq is full-blown civil war. That's what we're dealing with there, and the United States and its allies who are still there are not just dealing with an insurgency anymore. They're babysitting a civil war. How would you respond to that?
Well, I don't think it's a full-blown civil war yet, because if you did, you'd have the Shiites taking over the military and the reins of government and going after the Sunni areas. The Shiites have shown amazing restraint with this insurgency. And I think our tipping point will be whether they get a coalition, not a coalition, whether they get a unified government. And that's the only hurdle they have not yet overcome. And that's what I've got colleagues over there right now that every signal that members of Congress are trying to provide to the Iraqis is to form this unified government and move forward. And that's what we have to wait and see.
Other than that, the formation of a unified government, what are the biggest challenges in Iraq, and how do you assess the state of our ongoing presence there?
Well, as they build up, we will build down. That's proper language. I mean, we'll draw down. And if you look at a map of what military areas are now totally controlled by Iraqi, either military or police, every month it grows, and it's a large portion of the country. So as they continue to step up their ability to maintain order and police those regions, we will withdraw, and that's what we're all waiting for.
What will be the biggest issues going into the midterm elections, especially for legislators?
Well, I think you've already mentioned some. In a lot of parts of the country, the immigration is going to be, has taken on a life of its own. And it is going to be highly debated and discussed. And you can tell by the protests, by the Hispanic American community that they're not going to go down without a fight. And so that's going to be a big issue. I think taxes, spending, deficits, health care in Iraq. What you don't hear people talking about and what they should is the economy. And the economy is, with all these pressures, high gas prices, the war, threats of terrorism, our economy continues to grow and really to be the marvel of the developed countries. And, we, the Republicans, the party in control, we just don't get any credit for that.
On that issue of gas prices, what needs to be done? I was at the pump this weekend, and I watched them kind of go up and down, but it was almost $3 a gallon for me this weekend at one point, Congressman Shimkus. What needs to be done?
What, do you know what the price of a barrel of crude oil is today?
I do not.
It is $70 a barrel. You know what it was 2 years ago?
Probably half that?
It was $18 a barrel. That's why we've had a significant increase in crude oil and gasoline prices.
Why is that basic price of the barrel of oil going up so fast?
Supply and demand. There's limited supply of crude oil in the world markets. We now have the emerging countries, not just the United States and Europe, bidding for that oil. You now also have an emerging China and an emerging India that when this super tanker gets on the high seas, it just basically is putting out calls to the four powerful energy consumers of the world saying, okay, how much are you going to pay for this super tanker? And the price right now is $70 a barrel.
As we go into these midterm elections, what is the realistic assessment of how the numbers might change in the House and in the Senate after November?
Yeah, I don't watch the Senate as well as, you know, because I'm a House guy. I think we hold the House. We may lose a couple seats, but we still stay as the majority party in the House. The Senate, which is really more tied, they're statewide races. They are probably even more tied to how the president's, you know, the president's numbers really can't get any worse than they are today. Hopefully they will tick up a little bit, and if they tick up a little bit, I think we're going to be fine even in the Senate.
You said in a previous conversation with me, Congressman Shimkus, before this year rolled around, anticipating a midterm election, that there wasn't necessarily going to be a lot of pro-life legislation to be considered during 2006 because of those elections. Is there any? And after the elections?
Usually, you know, I know of them by now, and I can see stuff that's moving, but I don't know of any. But what you have to remember is on the House side, a Congress is a two-year term. So a lot of our pro-life legislation we passed last year is still within the same Congress and probably get action.
Well, Congressman Shimkus's phone lasted just about as long as our conversation did. He is from the 19th Congressional District in Illinois, and we thank him for being our guest and joining us for our Washington update. When we come back from this break, we've got audio open lines. We gave you just a little bit of it in our update on, well, probably our last update on the Dan Brown Da Vinci Code trial. Well, when we come back, very interesting little piece on Senator John McCain from Arizona, who has his eye on the presidential bid in 2008. All those bids begin very soon. Presidential politics right after these elections is going to get into full swing. He was speaking at Liberty University, Jerry Falwell's university. We'll play a piece on that. Also, Tom Cruise is a Scientologist. He's got this girlfriend. He plans to make her his wife, Katie Holmes, after their child is born. We heard about that last week. Well, the child is going to be born according to the practice of Scientology. They call it a silent birth. We'll find out what that's all about. And then, believe it or not, there are places in this world where on at least one Sunday, you can bring your dog to church. All that during audio open lines and your phone calls after this.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
There is nothing like the relationship between a mother and her child. Nothing. And that relationship is only surpassed by the relationship between our Heavenly Father and His children in Jesus Christ. These two themes, our earthly mothers and our Heavenly Father, are brought together in a beautifully illustrated children's book. It's our Issues Etc. book of the month for April. It's called Mommy Promises by Issues Etc. regular guest Julie Stiegelmeyer. Mommy Promises is available from Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. You can also browse before you buy and find the book at our website, issuesetc.org. Mommy Promises is right there on the homepage, issuesetc.org. It's the Issues Etc. book of the month for April, Mommy Promises by Issues Etc. regular guest Julie Stiegelmeyer, 1-800-325-3040.
Evolutionists, saying it's okay to mix church and state?
Answers with Ken Ham, best-selling author and speaker on the book of Genesis. I thought, Ken, that evolutionists were fighting to keep religion out of the classroom. Are you saying they've now changed their minds?
Well, Mark, it seems as though the National Center for Science Education, now that's the group that works overtime to keep what they call religion out of the nation's science classrooms, thinks mixing science and religion is okay after all, but only as long as religion is used to support evolution. You see, this group, headed by the anti-creationist Eugenie Scott, has teamed up with the University of California to build a website for teachers called Understanding Evolution. Now, part of the funding came from a nearly $500,000 federal grant, tax dollars. Well, the website encourages teachers to use religion to promote evolution. How? Teachers are told that nearly all religious people, theologians, and scientists who have religious beliefs endorse evolution. The site goes so far as saying that believing in evolution actually enriches their faith. What you won't find on this site are the scientific arguments against evolution or any mention of those who believe in a literal six-day creation. You see, evolutionists will stop at nothing to indoctrinate others into believing their secular humanist worldview.
In today's culture wars, the creation-evolution controversy is often at the front lines. Discover more when you read Ken Ham's free booklet at AnswersRadio.com. AnswersRadio.com.
We give thanks for the folks at LCMS World Relief because they are the hands and the feet that allow many people to reach out in charity and love to those who are less fortunate than we.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Arthur Just on the importance of LCMS World Relief.
In the Gospels, Jesus says that he came not to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. And spending out his life for us on the cross is how he served us. Because Christ is in us, and we embody him in his mercy and love, we are to manifest that in our lives. And LCMS World Relief does exactly that. By reaching out with concrete expressions of Christ's love, mercy, and compassion to those who have been broken by storm and tempest, who, for whatever reason, need the kind of love and compassion that is in us because Christ is in us.
For more information or to donate to LCMS World Relief, call them toll-free 1-888-930-4438.
Next time on the Bible study, we continue in the Lord's Prayer. We'll deal with the petition that reads, "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." We'll talk about it with Pastor John Schmidtke, pastor at Bethlehem Lutheran Church in St. Louis. The Bible study is heard weekday mornings at 10:05. The Lord's Prayer is our focus. We hope you can join us. The Bible study on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., Scott Klusendorf is going to join us. You know, last week we did an interview with Don Rubin of the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures, and then we had a response from Dr. Hurlbut from the President's Bioethics Council. Well, that's not the only response we're going to get. As soon as we did that interview, we knew that we had to talk with Scott Klusendorf about the Missouri Stem Cell Initiative and get his reaction to our interview and some of the responses given by Don Rubin of the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. Thursday on the program, Dr. Jeff Gibbs of Concordia Seminary. We're going to talk about, it's a big word, but don't be scared, propitiation. It's one of those words that when people hear it, they say, "I have no idea what that could possibly mean." If you're one of those, tune in Thursday. It's big not only because it's long, it's big because it's very important in Scripture. Christ is our propitiator, our substitute, the one who's made redemption for us. We'll talk about that with Dr. Jeff Gibbs Thursday on the program. Now, just this afternoon, Sally Henriksen was kind enough to send over via truck a number of pamphlets from LCMS World Relief. Their theme is A Touch of Mercy, but these pamphlets cover a variety of subjects all along that theme, a theology of mercy, what does it mean to be in Lutheran social ministry, theological reflections on a confessional Lutheran involvement in neighborhood renewal. We talked with Uwe Simonetto about urban renewal and several more. Many of them are authored by Pastor Matt Harrison, Executive Director of LCMS World Relief and Human Care. For more information about LCMS World Relief and these resources that they offer free, go to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or you can call them. This is a different number than we normally give for LCMS World Relief, but if you want these many resources, they're all free. You can call them 1-800-248-1930, 1-800-248-1930, and it's extension 1380. Ask for these free resources from LCMS World Relief. John McCain was on Meet the Press Sunday, and what was that? Oh, two Sundays ago? Okay. He was on Meet the Press two Sundays ago, April the 2nd. One of the issues that was discussed was Senator McCain not only, you know, hoping to be president in 2008, but also being the commencement speaker at Liberty University next month. That's Jerry Falwell's institution. Let's listen in to Meet the Press from two Sundays ago.
I do things because, well, I think they're right. I mean, and obviously, if people are free to judge however they want to. As regards to Reverend Falwell, which is the major thrust of your comments, I met with Reverend Falwell. He came to see me in Washington. We agreed to disagree on certain issues, and we agreed to move forward. I believe that speaking at Liberty University is no different from speaking at the New College or Ohio State University, all of which I'm speaking. I speak at a lot of colleges and university. I'm pleased to have the opportunity to do so, to talk to young Americans and talk to them about the obligations and the privileges of freedom.
But, Senator, when you were on here in 2000, I asked you about Jerry Falwell, and this is what you said.
Governor Bush swung far to the right and sought out that they support of Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell. Those aren't the ideas that I think are good for the Republican Party.
Do you think that Jerry Falwell's ideas are now good for the Republican Party?
I believe that the Christian right has a major role to play in the Republican Party. One reason is because they're so active and their followers are. And I believe they have a right to be a part of our party. I don't have to agree with everything they stand for, nor do I have to agree with everything that's on the liberal side of the Republican Party. If we have to agree on every issue, we're not a Republican Party. I believe in open and honest debate. Was I unhappy in the year 2000 that I lost the primary and there were some attacks on me that I thought was unfair? Of course. Should I get over it? Can I serve the people of Arizona best by looking back in anger or moving forward?
Do you believe that Jerry Falwell is still an agent of intolerance?
No, I don't. I think that Jerry Falwell can explain to you his views on this program when you have him on.
All right, that's an interesting way to end that little conversation. Let's hear from you on what Senator McCain had to say on Meet the Press, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We also have our in-studio email address. That means you email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org. We get the email right here in the studio in real time with your question or your comment. They just hand it to me, and I read it. It's a miracle of science. issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's audio open lines for the next 20 minutes. Okay. McCain said that he and the Reverend Falwell had agreed to disagree on certain issues, and then they agreed on other issues. He did not specify what they were. Tim Russert did exactly what Tim Russert does so very well. It's why he has that big chair on Sunday mornings. He played an audio clip from some time back. Senator McCain faulting President George W. Bush at the time for, quote, swinging far to the right and seeking out religious conservatives. Well, some might say that Senator McCain is, if not swinging far to the right, at least he's seeking out religious conservatives in hopes for taking President George W. Bush's place after 2008. But he does not consider Jerry Falwell an agent of intolerance, whereas he was very clear beforehand that he did. He says that the influence of the religious right is not necessarily a negative for the Republican Party. All views are going to be tolerated in the Republican Party. But he was one of the chief voices, if you will remember, when George Bush was running for president the first time, and then I believe even again for the second term, he was one of the chief voices, at least in the 2000 elections, criticizing President George W. Bush after he had lost the primary, criticizing George W. Bush for seeking out religious conservatives. And Bush was very upfront about it. He said he knew how many evangelical voters there were out there, and he was going to go and find them, and he was going to make them his voters. And it looks like it worked for President George W. Bush. Do you think it'll work for John McCain? Would you vote for Senator John McCain if it were 2008 today? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You know, he has a stellar record on the life issue. I think he's 100% with most of the pro-life organizations out there. Would you vote for him? There's no doubt where he will stand on the life issue. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's audio open lines this Tuesday, April the 11th. We're coming to you live. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. I hear from many listeners after we go off the air via the email on subjects we're talking about. You can email me right here, right now, and we can have that conversation right now. issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's go to the phones. Calling from his car, Chris is on the line. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Todd. How are you tonight?
Very well.
Super. Hey, I had an interesting thought. You know, there has been a tremendous amount of support from the Christian right for President Bush and for the Republican Party in general. And yet it occurred to me, most people who make up the Christian right, of whom I'm sure I would be categorized, would never want to attend a church with the diversity of tolerances that the Republican Party tolerates. And yet we all seem to get so rabidly excited about the party, and that's seems like an odd contradiction to me.
You know, we've been talking about this a lot. Probably ever since I've been sitting in this chair, Chris, you've hit upon something kind of a reoccurring theme, and that is Christians, many Christians, I don't know if they'd call themselves the religious right or not, but many Christians seem to have the inability to distinguish between conservative social, political, and moral views and conservative Christianity, conservative Christian theology. They think, well, heck, pro-life, they say all the right things about tax reform. I remember when Rush Limbaugh first started broadcasting, every once in a while someone would slip through the screening process who simply assumed that Rush Limbaugh was a religious broadcaster because of his political views. They assumed he was a Christian. Now, as far as I know, he is. But they assumed that he was conservative in his theology. Now, Rush has always meticulously steered away from theological issues. Probably a good idea for him to do that. He's not a religious broadcaster. But people would say, well, he's politically, socially, and morally conservative. He's got to be religiously conservative. You know, I wrote an article about this some time back called Bible-Believing Liberals, where I demonstrated that it's quite common for Christians to be politically, socially, and morally conservative and theologically liberal. George W. Bush is a great example. He's a member of the United Methodist Church, and by that association, at the very least, that's one of the most liberal church bodies in the United States. And he's politically conservative. No doubt about that either. So the inability to distinguish between my political views and my theological views. You're right, Chris. The Christians who support the president, and I'm one of them, would never join a church with as diverse a set of viewpoints as we find in the Republican Party. So go, I would like to say at this point, go figure. Because I can't figure it out either. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Katie Holmes is the girlfriend of now famous Scientologist and movie star. He's almost more famous for being a Scientologist now than he is for being a movie star. And he's got Mission Impossible 3 coming out, which I will see because those are great movies. He's kooky, he's crazy, but he makes great action films. Well, Katie Holmes will be marrying Tom Cruise, unless the tabloids tell us otherwise, after their baby is born. And she's going to have the baby the Scientology way. This is from CNN.
It will be the birth heard, or not heard, around the world. For months, many have eagerly awaited the offspring of Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes. Speculation has been rampant that Katie will deliver her baby via silent birth, a tradition encouraged by Cruise's religion, Scientology.
You get an animal and I'm going to get an animal.
Michelle Seward is an active Scientologist. 5 years ago, she gave birth to son Sage, following the church's guidelines and her belief.
The least amount of words said as quiet as it can be, having the most natural childbirth as possible, will create a great experience for a mother and for a baby.
Seward and the Church of Scientology call silent birth a media misnomer. They say it's really a quiet birth they strive for.
If a noise is made, or if a moan is done, it's okay.
Church officials released this statement to CNN. Chatty doctors and nurses, shouts to push, push, and loud or laughing remarks to encourage by attending husbands are the types of noises that are meant to be avoided. Words spoken during moments of pain and unconsciousness can have adverse effects on an individual later in life.
I don't want to be told, push, Michelle, push harder, come on, push. And then we fast forward to 3 years later, and Sage is riding a bike. And I say, Sage, push. Push harder, Sage. And all of a sudden, he's got a headache, and he's crying, and he doesn't like the bike.
The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists has no official position on the subject, and some doctors, like Beverly Hills OBGYN Dr. Peter Weiss, question how a loud delivery room could lead to any problems.
If that were the case, all the boys who've had circumcisions in this country over the last 30 years would be on a major rampage. It'd be like Paris, France right now.
Of course, Scientologists don't claim the benefits of quiet birth as medical fact, and even Dr. Weiss, who is not a Scientologist but has performed numerous quiet births over the years, sees no harm in the process.
I think any time you're in a stressful situation that puts everyone in a more calm environment, I think only can be beneficial.
The moment that he was delivered, he was actually wrapped in a blanket and on my chest for a good hour.
But while the birth of Tom and Katie's baby may be a quiet one, newborn babies tend to be the opposite. Brooke Anderson, CNN, Hollywood.
All right, I've been to a couple of these things, not the silent births. I don't know any Scientologists that I know of, but I've been to a couple births. They're not, I mean, it's not like they're playing a brass band during the birth, but there are beeps and whistles, and if something's going wrong, I really do want the nurse to get everyone's attention. I tried the whole push-push thing. They talked about this push-push, and the Scientologist that they interviewed said she didn't want to be told push-push when she was having her baby, which I kind of thought was the whole point of having the baby. You know what I mean? The pushing is the important part of having the baby. I mean, you could sit around with all of the Yanni music playing you want and the candles lit, but the baby's got to come out, okay? And that usually involves some pushing. At least from my experience. So, she didn't want to be told push, push. I tried that when I was, you know, I'd seen all the films, the Lamaze films, and I'd seen the television shows where babies are being born. And I tried to do what the Lamaze teachers told me I was supposed to do there in the birthing chamber. And the nurse, both times, I don't know if I was doing it wrong or if I was just in the way, the nurse both times, the first time, unkindly, and the second time more kindly, told me just to stand in the corner and let them do their job. I wasn't helping. But it wasn't that noisy. I mean, there was noise. Well, the Scientologists, I don't know where in the book Dianetics you're going to find L. Ron Hubbard saying this, but the Scientologists believe that the birth should be a quiet process. The least amount of talking necessary. The baby, apparently free to make as much noise as the baby wants to make. So what do you think about this silent birth practice among the Scientologists? Katie, I can guarantee you what's going to happen. All the rage. Young women who admire Katie Holmes, who hope to regain their figure as quickly as she does, going into the hospitals and saying to their OBGYNs, Katie Holmes had one of those silent births. Can I have one of those? What do you think about it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Give me a call, moms. Those of you who've been through this. I mean, I was there for the birth of my two children. I don't remember the yelling. I don't remember the crying. I just remember the baby. That's all I remember. All of that is wiped away. But you moms, you've been through this. What do you think when you hear that Katie Holmes is going to have a silent birth? 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Now, I don't mind if there's silence, but the premise here, at least according to the Scientologists, is this would negatively affect the child, mother and child, later in life. The Scientologist was concerned that if there were people there telling her to push, then she would somehow pass on that negative attitude to her child later in life, and then he'd get a headache. That's what she said. I'm sorry. Bad thetans? Who knows? 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Oh, this does demonstrate, before I go to the phones, this does demonstrate that Christians are not the only ones who are questioned and perhaps even, you know, kindly ridiculed in the press. Scientologists are too. We are not alone in this. Kia calls from Birmingham, Alabama, listening on the internet. Hi,
hey,
Kia.
Todd. How you doing?
Doing good.
I just gave birth 8 weeks ago. And I tell you, I needed a quiet room. I did. I needed a quiet room. I remember I was in labor. I went in the hospital at 8 o'clock at night. Babe wasn't born until 8 o'clock the next morning. Mm. This is our fourth. And I remember during the night just being so mad at everything because I couldn't get to sleep, and I was in labor, and they weren't giving me any kind of meds. And so the TV was bothering me. Even the lamp that was on in the corner, I looked at it. I was like, if I could get out of this bed, throw the lamp. Everything just irritated me. So if they mean quiet in that way, sure. But as far as, push, and then my kid's 5, riding a bike and having problems, that's a little crazy for me.
You're really talking about kind of the labor leading up to the delivery. And during the delivery, were you annoyed by the sounds in the room, by the conversation of the doctors? Did that make you worry at all?
Not at all. I wasn't. I mean, when it came to actually pushing the baby out, I didn't notice it. I was too focused on the baby. Who has time to think about that?
Kia, thank you very much. Well, our first baby was born in kind of normal time frame, and our son just. We were in and out before we even knew what was going on. We were all geared up for some hours of labor. We walked in, and an hour later, we had the baby in our arms. So Kia didn't even notice the talking during the labor. Given what women have said about the labor process and the delivery process, I'm amazed that any woman would have time to worry about being told push. All right, let's continue audio open lines with this report from Reuters. Nicaraguans take their dogs to church as part of a local tradition. Let's find out more about what this is all about.
It may be a dog's life, but at least once a year, the canine is king, at least in Nicaragua's second largest city of Masaya. In this Central American city, the Feast of St. Lazarus, the city's patron saint, is marked by an unusual and visually striking custom where locals dress up their dogs and bring them to church. The traditional church procession dates back more than 50 years and has evolved from a conflation of two different biblical characters. The first Lazarus was the man brought back from the dead by Jesus, with the second Lazarus, a character in a parable, a poor man who wished to eat the crumbs from a rich man's table, but was left to suffer with only a dog to lick his sores. In this distinctly Nicaraguan celebration, the little dog is given pride of place and the saint revered for his closeness to animals. Deborah Luderbeck, Reuters.
Now that was interesting. We don't dress up our dog. She's just as pretty as she can be without any clothes. Occasionally a bandana, although I don't encourage that kind of thing. One Christmas there was a Santa Claus hat, but that, yes. And I took a picture and sent it out on our Christmas mailing. The first picture was my dog in a Santa Claus hat. Beautiful picture. Beautiful dog. I love dogs. We spent watching sheepdogs run down in Waterloo. They have the sheep festival, our local custom. Not Nicaraguan. No one dressed up the dogs, but we didn't take them to church, but we went to the sheepdog festival. I love the dogs. I'm fascinated by them. I could just talk about them and think about them constantly. When you dress a dog up, that's just a little strange. Do you dress up that Bichon Frise thing that you have at home that is reputed to be a dog? I think it's in the rodent family, actually, but do you dress it up? Does Beth dress it up? Open the door. Does Beth dress up the Bichon Frise?
Only when she comes back from the groomer. She's got like a bow or something.
A bow.
Yeah.
Wait.
The groomer!
Have you ever put a... Has anyone in your family ever put a Santa Claus hat on the Bichon Frise?
No, I don't think so.
What's the Bichon Frise's name?
Lily.
Okay. I don't know if Jeff can... Do you consider it a dog? No. Just a very expensive what?
Cat.
Ah, yes. A dog that's more cat than dog. Well, okay, you dress up the dog, and then you take it to church. I like their reasoning to a certain degree, because what they're trying to do is remember a biblical saint in the proper way. It's interesting to see how these things kind of evolve and change over time, and how things get conflated. Lazarus being raised from the dead, the Lazarus of Jesus' parable, the dogs licking the poor man's wounds, and then the closeness to animals. And in order to honor the saint, you dress up your dog and you bring him to church. I mean, it's a funny picture. It shows the thin line of honoring the saints. I mean, it really does. And it's a line that we ought to carefully observe. We do it whenever we talk about a saint's day here on Issues, etc. Every time we have that same conversation, how do we rightly remember and honor those Christians who have gone before us, those who have come to us either from Scripture or from the history of the church as examples of God's great mercy to sinners in their lives and in what they've confessed? Is it done by dressing up a dog and bringing it to church? No, that doesn't exactly... I mean, if you want to dress up your dog and bring your dog to church, fine, but don't do it under the pretext of somehow rightly remembering the saints. How do we rightly remember them? Let's review this before we close up. We rightly remember them by giving thanks to God for the mercy that he has shown them and us. It's the same in Jesus Christ. Giving thanks to God for the example their life has been. And that's an example of a sinner redeemed by Jesus Christ and forgiven, living daily in the forgiveness of sins. And we give thanks to God for the contribution that they may have made in their life or their work or their confession or their preaching to the church. And there's so much there already in the long life of Christ's body to give thanks to God for. We don't need to dress up our dogs and bring them to church. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll visit with Julie Stiegemeyer, author of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, Mommy Promises. We'll also talk with Scott Klusendorf, get his reaction to Don Rubin and his Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. Then Thursday, Jeff Gibbs on propitiation. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.